The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
I am rolling on need to know whenever you're ready to roll, and then I'll come back at you here in about 30, 35 minutes. We'll get after it.
All right, sounds good. Need to know in 4, 3, 2. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Need to Know. I'm Kip Kiefer, the proprietor of this particular program on TKR, and wherever you could get you're streaming on TKR programming. If you're listening to us on one of the Apple platforms or wherever you're accessing, I hope you're having a good start to your holiday season. We are really in high gear now. I always think it's ridiculous that you start seeing Christmas trees and lights and decorations right before Halloween. I think that's a little premature, but as I come to you on this morning in December of December 8th, it is probably very appropriate to be lighting trees and decorating yards. I look at some of my neighbors. These are people I don't even see. I think they might live under their house in some kind of secret bunkers. I've got neighbors on both sides that I don't ever see them outside. Not that I spend a lot of time out in my yard doing anything or hanging out in the front yard, except to go to the mailbox. But I don't see these people. I don't have any contact with them, and they live, you know, several hundred feet away. So it's interesting that somewhere, I don't know if it's in the dark of the night or maybe it's in the sunrise hours of the morning, but at some point, sometime, both neighbors have done a rather elaborate job, not Clark Griswold style, from, of course, Christmas Vacation, but they have put up a pretty impressive array of lights, including, I don't know if they, maybe they have contact with each other. I can't think that it's a coincidence, but to me, and I have not gone up and closely examined them, but they've got this array of lights all across their front curb, and these are pretty considerably large front lawns, where they look like these little encased in some kind of plastic lights, all strategically placed about 5 feet from each other all the way down the line and around the corner to the side lot of their front line that leads to their driveway. But the bottom line is very impressive. I don't know when this happened. I will not be matching that effort because, first of all, I would not have any idea how to rig up lights, plug them in, make them have power. I could probably find some way to hang some lights, but as far as making them illuminate, that's out of my pay grade. Not very adept at anything like that. So my house, in between the brightly lit partners on either side, we'll just have to bask in their glow because we will not be generating anything of that nature. If someone wants to give me a Christmas wreath, I'll put it up on my door. But because I am certainly not a Scrooge, I'm in the holiday spirit, but pyrotechnics in my front yard are not part of my particular observance. And I had no plans to start today with that particular subject, but that's the beauty of the podcast and being the broadcaster on the podcast. You never know what you're going to do, and today is one of those days. I still maintain my full-time job as the executive director of the Birmingham Racing Commission. We oversee the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, who has had a sensational year, produced a bunch of revenue for the state tax base and for what is in the state constitution, a statutory law that any excess of tax wagering fees that my agency collects is distributed to a list of about 18 different entities at the end of the year based on the percentage set forth in that statute. And we are going to have right at $6 million to pass out to all the recipients this year, which a pretty strong thing for an entertainment complex to provide to the city of Birmingham, a lot of local universities, municipalities, the city of Birmingham getting over $1 million in revenues. So really one of the good aspects of having a quality entertainment entity in your city is this distribution of funds, which for a long time when we were just doing racing only and the wagering fees that we collected were just enough to keep our lights on and keep us regulating the product. We didn't have very much money, if any, each from year to year to distribute. So the casino business has been very lucrative for the city of Birmingham and all the surrounding areas, providing about 450 jobs, and just has been a real pleasure after working with the McGregor family for 33 years on the track and the casino that they established, to have the Porch Creek Band, the Porch Band of Creek Indians come in, PCI Gaming, come in this year in April and assume that license. There has been no snag in terms of the transition. They do a phenomenal job of operating that facility, have been great to work with, and have great plans for expansion, and hopefully we'll see that here in the next year or two. Probably not a big effort legislatively to get things done in 2026. Gambling and gaming issues are not exactly what legislators are enthusiastic about discussing in an election year, which 2026 coming up is, but look for a full-scale push in 2027 to finally bring Alabama into the modern day, Mississippi. And this is a sad indictment that any of you listening should call your legislators, find out who your representative is. I imagine that about 90% of people in Alabama have no idea who their state representative is in their area, because it doesn't come into play that often unless something outrageous is going on in Montgomery. And under Governor Kay Ivey's leadership, there hasn't been much radical at all. Kay Ivey choosing the path of least resistance as being governor, basically nailing shut the windows and doors in the governor's mansion and not being seen unless she's pardoning a turkey at Thanksgiving. Certainly not giving policy positions or pushing the envelope in any way. And that's why she's been politically successful, because she has basically stayed out of the storm and has enjoyed the trappings of the governor's mansion, not making any waves. And in politics, that's the surest route to survival, unless something disastrous happens due to their indifference. So anyway, we will see what happens at the end of the day, but I've been that long-winded explanation. I'm not as up to date or fired up today about political issues. It's kind of a time of the year where things stagnate. There's not a whole lot going on in Washington right now because they, of course, their infamous breaks are already in holiday mode. If there is any business being conducted, about half of the Congress is not even in Washington, and they're not going to be spending a lot of time there in the next couple of weeks. So this is kind of a lull period. President Trump is hitting the road we talked about affordability crisis last week. The affordability crisis, which now Trump has inherited full scale from Joe Biden, there's starting to be some blowback in Washington at the Trump administration from independents and some maybe less than committed people in the MAGA movement. The true Trump soldiers are not amongst the crowd, but a lot of people that voted for Trump because the outrageous job done by the pseudo administration before this, the pretend president, the marionette Joe Biden, the de facto third term of Barack Obama, with all of his officials being the placeholders in terms of the Biden administration. It was Obama 3. And of course, the results were disastrous. We saw inflation skyrocket to 9%, the highest rate it had been in decades, maybe a century. And prices went right up the ladder as well, of course, with energy being cut back dramatically. If energy costs are high, prices are going to go right along with them, because people realize that transporting goods to market is very expensive, either by rail or by truck or even by air in some cases. But you have to consider the price of high energy cost on manufacturing of goods is a considerable factor as well. So with the cutback, the whole myth of this cataclysmic climate change and all the hysteria about cutting back fossil fuel production, no building of additional refineries, all of the decisions made to kowtow to the environmental wing of the radical leftist movement in the Democratic Party had terrible consequences on you and me and all the American consumers, where we had to go to the grocery store and pay 25 or 30% more for our standard items we picked up. I won't bore you with my list, but it includes the big jugs of V8 juice and Diet Mountain Dews and Powerades, all my staples that I have to survive. I saw my price go up 15, 20% on the items I've been buying for years during that time. So, and everybody felt that. A lot of folks, the living paycheck to paycheck, have to endure the higher prices. Even going out to dinner, when you get to the point at McDonald's, if you get the value meal and the value meal costs you 12 or 13 bucks, you know things have gotten way out of hand. And that's kind of the experience we had between 2020 and 2024, when America ignorantly, stupidly elected a guy who didn't even have a functioning brain. And of course, we've been all over this many times in shows. I'm not so sure America did do that, but that's water under the bridge. That administration is gone, and we are in a new era. But the problem for Donald Trump right now is he ran on a platform to do a lot of things, close the borders, produce much more American energy, stop wars around the globe, radically address the fact that we had politicized so many of the things in our country that can't be politicized. Law enforcement, the court system, the judicial branch of the government all have to be above reproach. And if you get into the fact where all of the decision-making and all of the dynamics of those areas are politically motivated, you've got a real problem. When a good example right now, you see the pipe bomb suspect, and a lot of folks had even forgotten about that aspect because it was buried by the pseudo-administration before. But on January 5th, the night before the January 6th insurrection, which was no insurrection because insurrection means an attempted overthrow by armed marauders, the insurrection in the Capitol on January 6th was a bunch of morons who stupidly decided, because they were basically coerced to enter the Capitol building purposely to create a giant scandal, they fell right into the trap and went storming in there armed with their cell phones to take selfies in the Capitol while Congress was conducting their business. This was not an armed mob who came in guns blazing, intent on overthrowing the government. This was a bunch of people stupidly goaded into coming in to create a great showcase scandal for the Democrat Party to use continuously over the next 5 or 6 years. And they're still using it to some degree. But the night before that, there were pipe bombs planted at several areas in Washington, including both the Republican National Committee headquarters and the Democratic National Committee headquarters. It was a head scratcher. You know, who would take these steps to do this? And the Biden Justice Department, their FBI, did a preliminary investigation, of course, compiled a bunch of records. Thankfully, these devices that could have been lethal did not go off. It's not been explained to the American people what the technical snafu or if the bomber ever attempted to do this, or was this some kind of twisted message? Because these were functioning devices. They were built properly. They were not defective in any way, but they were not ignited, thankfully. And it's been a mystery since January the 5th or the morning of January 6th of 2021 when they were discovered. There was an arrest made last week, a gentleman named Cole from Northern Virginia, 30 years old, said by his family to be basically autistic and just not very societally functional. Well, he was societally functional enough to go out and buy all the materials and construct meticulously over a dozen pipe bombs to place around key places in Washington. And it really doesn't make much sense. But the bottom line is the Biden FBI, under the direction of the despicable, now historically just slimy character, Christopher Wray, who the sad part and the ironic part of the story was, Christopher Wray was an appointee of Donald J. Trump. Trump, after firing James Comey, encouraged by another guy who turned out to be a complete turncoat, although we already knew he was a slime ball when Trump allowed him to be in his transition team, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, somehow got in Trump's ear and talked up this Christopher Wray, W-R-A-Y, who was the FBI director during the entire first Trump term after James Comey was fired shortly after he took office, and the entire pseudo-administration under Joe Biden. And Christopher Wray did more in his 8 years in that job to politicize the FBI, the premier law enforcement agency in the world. But they became totally ineffective because instead of concentrating on real threats to the United States and trying to use FBI resources to capture criminals, we went DEI under Christopher Wray in the FBI. We overhauled a bunch of hiring policies, promotion policies. We the most important thing, just like in the military, was to concentrate on making sure that we had a wide variety of individuals, both ethnically, politically, religiously, put into key places to level the playing field of fairness. And in law enforcement circles and military areas, having fairness and not having the most qualified people is catastrophic. And not only the people, but the policies. And this one is the prime example of what we ran into. And basically that means that the pipe bomb investigation, where they compiled a bunch of evidence, it wasn't going the way that they wanted it to go. They were determined that we're going to find the guy who did this, and it's going to be a right-wing Trump MAGA guy. This is all part of the January 6th insurrection, where Trump urged people to go down and storm the Capitol, and fight, which was not the true account of what happened. Trump's speech that morning at the mall in the Capitol, there's been three different news agencies, including recently BBC in England, who spliced together different parts of the speech to make it sound like Trump was telling people to go to the Capitol and commit violence, which absolutely was not The first part about go to the Capitol and stand up, show your support for the brave people that are fighting for our country, that are inside doing the work, basically giving the go ahead to go down there and peacefully protest and also show support for Republican colleagues who were disputing election results. Trump was still under the fantasy that Vice President Mike Pence would stand up in front of that group who was sanctioning the election on that day and urged people to abandon their responsibility constitutionally to represent their state's verdict on casting their electoral votes. And these are the electoral college representatives that process oversees. Once they do that, the Senate then ratifies that vote. And he was hoping and urged Pence to not accept the vote of the Electoral College. And, of course, that would have been a constitutional violation of the duties of the vice president, who is the sanctioning presidential entity in the Senate. The vice president is president of the Senate, breaks all ties, and runs the business there. So Pence did the right thing. He didn't bow to that. And Trump, you know, was criticized, as he should have been, because at that point, that would have been a stupid and senseless gesture that would not have been upheld by the court, and probably would have prevented Trump from winning a second term 4 years later, as we know happened in 2024. He probably, if Pence had followed that directive, his political career would have been all but over, because he would have gone down as the sorest loser of all time. Although, there is certainly enough data and evidence that Trump wasn't wrong, but at that point the game was over. The ship had sailed. That was just a stupid idea to urge Pence to do that. But they took another part in the last 5 minutes of the speech talking about how every American needs to rise up and fight, and splicing those two together, that led to a narrative by the extreme left that Trump had urged people to go down and violently attack the Capitol, which was not the case. But the problem is, when the investigation under the pseudo-administration started to not point in directions of some radical right-wing, you know, this group of people that they had invented in their mind, that there's this undertone of, and the MAGA movement is really just a bunch of white supremacists who are outraged at what's happening in this country, which couldn't be further from the truth. I don't consider myself a MAGA guy, but I am somebody who is traditionally for the founding principles of our country, as I iterate over and over on this program. The founding principles, of course, being Judeo-Christian principles of religion and freedom of religion and speech and all of our constitutional guarantees. So God, country, family are the three pillars of our society and our country. And that's not MAGA. That's 1780 Constitutional Congress stuff. That is the driving forces behind the United States of America. And anybody who's fallen in that camp now gets colored with that same brush, that if we're not for this radical change, this move to getting government being completely in charge of everything, remember the fateful words of Ronald Reagan: America is a country with a government. It can never be the other way around. And if you think about that, that's exactly what people like me and others who are pontificating at every opportunity, the importance of looking at the founding principles of this country, why the movement was made to America to be this free society, all the things we talk about. When Christopher Wray's FBI did not come up with somebody, white national MAGA supporter, extreme right wing extremist, who they kept trying to tell you was a major force in this country, people that were plotting to overthrow the government. When the investigation wasn't going in that direction, they just abandoned it. They put it on the shelf. They locked it up. They didn't pursue that. They did pursue everybody who was stupid enough to go into the Capitol. They got cell phone data. They pursued people and charged hundreds of Americans who were there that day to just loudly protest the election of Joe Biden and call the inconsistencies in the election process, which now are stipulated and documented as fact. A lot of really seedy dealings in so many areas of the country. The sudden shutdown of ballots being counted when Trump was trending ahead at midnight on election night, and the resumption a couple of days later when all of a sudden many additional ballots had been found in all of these places. Just enough in most cases. In Georgia, it was only a matter of like 1,100 votes that magically put Biden over the top and beat Trump in five of the seven swing states that turned the election in 48 hours after all those states suspended counting at the same time. I mean, it was such an audacious maneuver that was pulled. It still just amazes me to this day that we sat back and just accepted the results of that election, which were tainted to say the least. But that's, again, I remember on the morning after the election, I was reading different accusations in this area and people saying that, you know, this is going to be strong enough to turn this back around. And you know, I said, folks, you are being delusional. The hay's in the barn now. This election is over. There's no got to be, and this is going on for months. People saying, okay, well, here's the scandal in Arizona where they've just found a bunch of ballots that were never counted. They're going to go back and change the results of the election. It was delusional, hopeful thinking that was absurd, because once that was certified in Congress on that day in January, the election was over. There was going to be no, you know, backseas. We weren't going to go back and redo anything. The game was over then, and you had to be realistic enough to know that the driving force from that particular result was to never let it happen again. They took full advantage of the COVID emergency in 2020, and the COVID emergency also is pretty obvious right now, was not an accident. It was not a natural pandemic. It was spawned by people desperate that Donald Trump could not win another term, and it was to create the upheaval around the world and in the United States to lead to his election defeat, and that nefarious plan worked. But the bottom line is, once all that was determined, there was nothing to do to go back and change it. The spark that was lit, the fuse that was lit, was to make sure it didn't happen again for another chance in 2024. And at that time, it certainly didn't look like Donald Trump had any kind of political heartbeat in terms of him being the candidate. But whoever was going to run against Joe Biden in re-election, and the fact that the Democrats even put him up for re-election, is just astounding when you see and read all of the tell-all books about how this guy was totally tuned out after his first 6-7 months in office. He had no idea what was going on. He was kept in the shadows. You saw him get shot up with whatever a couple of times and go out and growl about this or that. But this guy is the most ridiculous president ever in the White House in the 250 years of this nation's history, because he had no idea what was going on and he wasn't in charge of anything. And you can read any of the books by his staffers, these people that were close to the administration, and it's all documented now. So with all that being said, the big news is in this first part of the Trump administration, he has lived up to his campaign promises. The new FBI went back, pulled all that off the shelf, found the guy with good old-fashioned police work, cell phone pings, receipts of buying these specialized materials used in these particular devices, and it all pointed to this Cole character, a 30-year-old who still lives at home with his mother and some of the rest of his family, works a few hours a week in his father's bail bondsman business, but just a guy who's kind of on the periphery of society. No real indication yet politically what he's all about, and that's kind of consistent with the explosives being put at both the Republican and Democrat headquarters, that there are guys like this, and it's emerging that the attempted assassin for Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania, Crooks, was also this kind of guy who was an avid Trump supporter in early social media posts in when he was 19 years old, and just 6 months later, he was declaring Trump the biggest despot ever, and you know somebody had to do something. But he also had on his list targeting a key Democrat official. So you get these people that are just kind of anarchists that just get so frustrated, but that they don't really, they're not. It's so hard for Americans to conceive that people are not necessarily politically motivated, Republican, Democrat, right, left, red, blue. You get people that get to the point where everybody in authority, any government official, any kind of major leader, all becomes the target, the blame for everything. It doesn't necessarily go along party lines or philosophical or ideological lines. It's just the leadership in general needs to be lashed out at. And that would be very consistent with this guy if that turns out to be the case. But the bottom line is, this case wasn't solved 4 years ago with the exact same evidence that they pulled out of the box after it had been up on the shelf, kind of like the Indiana Jones conclusion where they're wheeling the Ark of the Covenant into a giant warehouse of crated up material that spawns, you know, hundreds of feet and stacked up to the ceiling and all these things that the American government are hoarding. The FBI was doing the same thing with this investigation. And when they pulled everything out, the solution to the crime was there. But the Biden Justice Department and their FBI did not want to go there because the early indications were it wasn't going to yield the political answer that they needed. They wanted a right-wing scapegoat, and that was not where the evidence was taking them. So now that's a good example of one of the Trump accomplishments. But Trump did inherit this economy that, to be fair, had been brought back down to reasonable levels, but now the Trump White House has inflation down to under 3%, which is about where it kind of lurks all the time in just natural progression of things and cost increases in certain areas based on worldwide supply area things. I mean, there's just a lot of factors that lead into that. But prices have stabilized. Fuel is much less now. It, you know, here in Birmingham, which we are fortunate enough in this market to have some of the lower gas prices in the country, down at very reasonable levels, almost 50% less than in times of the previous administration. Even in some of the liberal areas, gas is still down now to about $3 a gallon, which is a big drop from close to $5 during most of the pseudo-administration. So those things are in line. There are tremendous economic changes coming, the infusion of so much more business and many more paying, well-paying jobs. A good way to battle inflation and high prices is for American workers to be making more money. And we told you on the last edition of this show that what Trump inherited is a a level of pricing that got to an area where if you're a company or a corporation, and you know, I talked about my V8 juice and my Diet Mountain Dews, if a guy like me used to pay $4 for a big jug of V8 juice, or $5 for a six pack of Diet Mountain Dew bottles, and now the price on both of those got jacked up to $6, $6.50, or even $7.50 for the Mountain Dews typically now. Once I go to the store and pay those prices, because those are the items I have to have, corporations and companies, even with prices coming down, once that threshold is reached, I told you this the day of the election results back last year, that it's almost impossible to bring those prices back down once a retailer or a company that produces those products establishes the fact that they can charge those prices and people are still going to pay it. And that's kind of the whole consumer corporate relationship. So prices are still high because until there's radical changes, because all, of course, another one of the Biden administration, the pseudo administration's policies was to push, and in these liberal states, push for huge increases in minimum wage, what you can have to pay workers. All of those things add up to these prices being kicked up to another level. And once they're at that threshold, it's really difficult to get them to come back down. So that's what Trump is trying to deal with. He's hitting the road this week to go out and tout all the economic changes that are coming to remind Americans that the big, beautiful bill prevented the biggest tax increase in history that would have hit on December 31st of this year at midnight. That is not going to happen now. Your income tax rates are going to stay the same. There's a lot of progress that's not being recognized in this first 8 or 9 months of this administration, and Trump's going to hit the road to kind of highlight that stuff this week. So that's the biggest political news that's going on. So not a whole lot to talk about, but to make you aware of some of those things are important things in Need to Know. And I gotta rant on one more subject before I leave here. It's kind of in the sports area, so I know a lot of you tune in for news and political observation, but I think this plays into the whole deal as well. Because, and again, I've already outed Trump for some childish behavior after the last election, although he had a right to be outraged because it was stolen. But, stomping your feet after the fact doesn't do any good. It just makes you look petty and small. But I've got to indict Trump on another thing. And I know it's a big, big, big deal for our country that next year we are hosting, along with Canada and Mexico, who we are fighting with right now. I think it's hilarious that in this big kumbaya event in the White House last week, Trump and the heads of the governments of Canada and Mexico were all there playing nice despite the continuing economic. Trump is trying to make those countries pay up their fair share instead of them just being our little brothers riding our coattails economically. And they have not received Trump's overtures very well. But we're bringing the World Cup to America, to North America, Mexico, U.S., Canada, hosting all of these countries from all over the world. Tens of millions of foreigners are going to come to the country, which we're used to because up until just the Trump administration started, we just let them come in for nothing. Now they're going to have to actually fly here and stay in hotels and spend money. And supposedly the economic impact is going to be huge for the World Cup, which is the great soccer tournament that invites the whole world. And, you know, such a grand event. Trump can't wait, even suggesting that maybe we need to conform with the rest of the world and start calling it football. That's grounds for impeachment, folks. Trump can't suggest that. We can call American football something else. Absolutely not. football in America is going to be football, the game we invented. We are not embracing soccer. I've heard my whole life since I was a kid, you just wait. Soccer is the most popular game in the world. It will be the most popular game in America shortly. Well, that was 5 decades ago. It's never happened, despite the fact that the globalists amongst us embrace the game. Now it drives me crazy. The bottom line: if I'm watching a football game, I'll see a bunch of soccer scores from Mexico and Europe. I don't care. I don't like the game. I don't embrace the game. It's not the beautiful game. It's the boring game. I laugh. Tony Curry, the proprietor of this network, tells me the story of his good friend and a great guy, by the way, Al Del Greco, who was a Hall of Fame level kicker in the NFL and at Auburn University, trying to explain to Tony the love of soccer. And Tony said, well, nobody ever scores. And he says, Tony, you don't understand. It's not the scoring that's exciting. It's the chance to score. Well, I can tell you, watching the awful Ohio State-Indiana game, which was tedious to say the least, in a 13-10 basically a couple of drunks staggering around trying to score. Ohio State got inside the 5-yard line twice. It was not exciting watching them trying to score, and they didn't score. So it was kind of like watching a soccer game. Yankee football, a major endorsement. Of course, don't even get me started on the fact that despite the fact that Ohio State lost to Indiana in the Big Ten championship game, they still are the number 2 team in the tournament, which is absolutely ridiculous. Georgia wins the toughest conference in the country by far, played the most difficult schedule, 10 times more difficult than Ohio State, and still, as the SEC champion, the premier conference in the country, is number 3 behind Ohio State. BS, ridiculous, bias. The same people making those votes are the same people excited about the World Cup coming here for boring-ass soccer, and we're going to make a big deal about it. Trump actually said, because there's going to be over 100 games between the three countries, he said, this is the equivalent to having 100 Super Bowls in North America next year. Give me a break on that rhetoric. If Paraguay plays Australia, that's not the freaking Super Bowl. If Trinidad Tobago is in the tournament and they're playing against, pick a country, Senegal, I don't care. That is not the Super Bowl. That is just a boring ass 1-0 or 1-1 soccer game. I'm not going to watch it. I'm not interested. And my final point, if the USA was even competent, if they even had a pulse in terms of being a significant player on the world stage in soccer, maybe I would actually open my eyes long enough to watch a little bit of the game. But folks, don't drink the Kool-Aid. I'm already seeing U.S. soccer commercials about them shocking the world, and this is their moment to step up on American soil and claim the greatest title in the world, the World Cup Championship. Ain't gonna happen. The USA sucks at soccer. The game sucks, and we suck. And until the USA is a world stage player, I particularly loathe the whole concept of soccer, have no interest in watching it, and all this brainwashing that the USA is a real contender in this thing, I don't believe it. We've never been before. We're no good at it. 335 million people in this country, and we can't find 25 guys who can run fast and kick the ball or stop the ball or whatever you have to do in soccer. We play like teams from this hemisphere in the pregames and the preliminary games, like I just mentioned, Trinidad and Tobago or Isle of Man or all these Caribbean nations that have like 700 people on the island, and they have better soccer teams or competitive soccer teams to the U.S. Until we don't suck at soccer. I have no interest in the game. I'm an American. I support American teams. We saw the miracle on ice in hockey where the U.S. won a gold medal. Until the U.S. men's soccer team, and we'll give the women credit, they have been good on the world stage, but it's women's sports, and I'm a Cro-Magnon. I'm not really into that either, but that's all my shortcomings, and I'll admit that. But the U.S. men's soccer program, who's had a revolving door of coaches, is not competitive on the world stage. They are not on the level of the major powers throughout Europe, and even Japan has emerged and some others. So until we are decent at soccer, I'm not going to pay any attention to it, and I may not pay much attention then. 104 Super Bowls. Come on, President Trump. Give me a break. That's absolutely ridiculous. It's great that it's coming here. I'm all for it, but don't just barrage me with information about how magnificent the World Cup's going to be from a sports standpoint, because it's not. The game sucks, and we suck, and that's all I got to say about that. I'm Kip Kiefer. We'll be back next week with another edition of Need to Know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.